This week on The Gist of It, the provincial election, why the Tory collapse. You know, I think Hudak should change his last name to Burr. Tim Burr! Is hitting in the NHL going the way of the dodo? By the way, the dodo was not extinct. It just retired from ecology after taking a hit to the head from Jody Shelley. Hank Williams Jr., what the hell does he know about golf anyway? Being thankful. Is it going the way of hitting in the NHL, which might be going the way
the dodo? I get it.
Dodo. Bill, the U.S. wants to build fences along the Canadian border. I say let them. But any baseballs hit over them, we keep.
Politics, sports, entertainment, pop culture. It's all fair game here. Somewhere in the city of Toronto, two brains are about to collide. What will remain is the gist of it. Here now are Don Landry and Bill Hayes.
You know, Don, one of the things about the Super Bowl, which, of course, is coming up again in February, eventually, by the way, it'll be in April, don't you think? Because
sure.
It started right around Christmas at one time, I think. And at any rate, one of the great things about it is, who's going to be doing the halftime show? Because they get big names. Let's face it, it's the Super Bowl.
Always.
Oh, for sure. The Stones have done it.
Yeah.
Springsteen has done it.
Black Eyed Peas weren't too good last year, were they?
Not really. No. How about Janet Jackson? Yeah. Saw a little more of her than you thought
maybe,
you would.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And this year, it is...
Well, it's not
perhaps
a done deal yet, right?
Perhaps.
Madonna.
Really?
No, that's a big name.
It certainly is.
Name.
Yeah,
she ain't what she used to be. I'll say that, you know, if you had Lady Gaga, that's like, you know, Madonna for 2011 when Madonna was still like a virgin and was a huge star.
Yeah, I agree. The parallels are incredible.
But I mean, they've done it. The Who, well, U2 is a little bit. They're not like aging. They are aging rockers, but not like
they
the
are.
Who and the Stones and you know, they've had acts like that. People who are past their glory days, but still
huge names.
Huge names, and Madonna's one of them. Who cares? All right, let Madonna sing at halftime. It's not going to kill you. All right, if you don't like Madonna, then flip something else on for half an hour. They'll be back to the football before you know it. Just have a good show, Madonna. Have a great show. Have a wonderful show. Just do some stuff from the 80s for Donnie, will you? Do some stuff for Donnie boy from the 80s. I don't want whatever you've done in the last 25 years I haven't listened to. So let's get back to Like a Virgin, perhaps Into the Groove, Bill. Crazy for You would be too down-tempo for the halftime show.
I think
show,
so.
But,
yeah, I think
but La
right.
Isla Bonita.
Oh, you got to love La Isla
give you
Bonita.
Just a perfect halftime.
Yeah,
for Indianapolis.
Hear you.
It's perfect.
But you know what she should do? And I think this would be brilliant. Born This Way. Because really, a lot of people hear it and go, that's Madonna. That's Madonna.
Speaking of, you know, that, you know, 80s, I love 80s music, of course. So that's why I'm rooting for the Milwaukee Brewers in the baseball playoffs.
I don't get
How could I not root? How could I root against a team that has both Corey Hart and Prince? Here's my only complaint about the Brewers. It's not even a complaint, but come on. You can't find somebody named Bryan Adams who can play baseball? Come on. Let's do it. And a Millie and a Vanilli, great double play combination, right?
Here's
Millie
the thing.
At shortstop, Vanilli at second.
The reason I like them is they're Brewers.
We talked about this as the summer went on, I think, from time to time, and that is we wondered what might happen in the provincial election.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I told you that knowing somebody fairly high up in the Liberal Party who said, we need to change the conversation. We want to change the conversation. When the election campaign comes around, we have to change the conversation. The conversation at the time was basically, that's enough of McGuinty. It's time for some change. And Tim Hudak and the Progressive Conservatives had an 11-point lead.
Yep.
They're down by 10 based on two or three polls that have come out this week. That's a collapse of Red Sox proportions, circa 2011. So did the Liberals change the conversation? Did Hudak change the conversation? What happened here? We'll find out at the time of taping, we're a day away from the election.
Mm-hmm.
What happened here?
Well, that's a good question because it really will come down to, I think, did Hudak lose this or did McGuinty win it? My belief is with elections now, they're popularity contests. I mean, for the most part, if you're really a political junkie, if you have some kind of a view, it doesn't matter when the election is, you are going to stay in that corner. If you're liberal, you're going to vote liberal. If you're conservative, you're going to vote conservative. It's that the great unwashed, the people who are undecided, the people who, you know, bounce from camp to camp, who make the difference. And in this particular case, it is early. I'm not sure yet what the results will be, but I would say Hudak lost this.
Yeah.
And I think the reason he lost it, there was never a point in this election that I saw where there was a moment that he grabbed. There was nothing. It was, I think, a lot of the negative stuff. Some of the spots they ran, for instance, were so obviously taken out of context. The one, for instance, you're going to have to pay more.
That's a clip of McGuinty, and it was obviously clipped.
Clipped, and you don't know what he was talking about. He could have been talking about the Toronto Star. Who knew? You know,
that's a fairly usual political ad campaign template.
But it was poorly done.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, at least find one that looks like it might be the end of a sentence.
Well, because what that does is it brings into question. Okay, they're cheating on this a little bit,
right.
And I just don't think, for whatever reason. Whatever the it is, Hudak doesn't have it. I don't believe that McGuinty has it either, but I think that if the conservatives made a mistake here, it's that they didn't elect a leader who people are anxious to follow. Yeah, I just don't get that sense out of him.
They had a beatable opponent here, obviously. Before the summer polls were coming in, you know, I think we heard that. And and whatever you believe politically, that happens to incumbents. At some point.
Always.
Throw that bum out. Anybody but whoever it might be. In this case, it was McGuinty. So they had a beatable opponent, but they just, whether they didn't strategize properly, whether Hudak was, I think it's a bit of both. I think Hudak didn't strike me and hasn't struck me, particularly in the last couple of weeks since the debate on, as being a Stephen Harper or being a Mike Harris. And again, say what you will about them, but believe what they say. Follow them if you will. Hate them if you do. Good, strong, on-point communicators.
Absolutely.
Hudak just did not show that during the debate to me.
He was I thought he was very flat in the debate, frankly.
I think what we saw in the debate was, again, politics aside, Dalton McGuinty, in my opinion, was by far and away the best communicator behind a podium that night. And I think Andrea Horvath started strongly and maybe flagged a little
bit. I'd agree with you on that.
Or McGuinty got stronger. But he just seemed to be a better communicator. And I think that has helped. And then you had a couple of Tory cock-ups as well, too, didn't you?
The foreigner thing was,
that was the first one.
That's a word, for whatever reason, puts a lot of backs up, I believe. You know, and the fact is, too, and I think this was the mistake on that. You can do things like that. But once the reaction is out there and it's pretty evident to all that it was negative, you have to backtrack really quickly. You have to apologize. We made a mistake. They didn't do that. They stuck with it for another week.
Man.
And that's a big mistake. It's almost as if they were saying at the time, we don't care what you think. We're preaching to our choir here. And
why would you do that?
Well,
to
me, it's divisive. I mean, and that's why they did it, I think.
But that's what I'm saying. If you're trying to, divisive politics might do something in the United States right now. It might work for you.
Mm-hmm.
But in Canada, in Ontario, in 2011, I firmly believe that most people are moderate, whether you want to call them moderate conservatives or moderate liberals.
Mm-hmm.
I think most people fall close to the center.
The middle wins.
And I don't think they want division. I think they want conciliation. And I think they look for a leader who's going to build those conciliations and not try to divide. And the other big mistake the Tories made to that end, I think, was, misrepresenting, it would seem, the curriculum, the education curriculum, and trotting out what seemed to be, it was taken as a homophobic plank in the platform.
No question, it was.
And that doesn't work in Ontario in 2011. It probably wouldn't have worked in Ontario in 1981, never mind 2011. Again, I just think more people are more moderate. I think they are more accepting of other people's lifestyles. And it may not be for them, but they want to be accepting and friendly and progressive about it. And the Hudak's conservatives took a far right turn, and they weren't going to win anybody's heart and mind other than the people whose hearts and minds they'd already won. They didn't build from their base out in order to win this election.
Let me ask you something. If you think of conservative politics in this country and a bastion of it, what province do you think of?
Alberta.
Exactly. And tell me a little bit about Alison Redford, who's their new premier-elect, I guess. I guess she's taken over.
Yeah, she's the premier.
And
for now, anyway.
But very much a red Tory. We haven't seen red Tories in quite some time.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the way of the future. Maybe people are starting to look at this and go, you know, wait a minute. We don't have to necessarily be that far right.
If this has happened, I mean, who would have thought? I never would have dreamed that I could, in the foreseeable future, predict that Alberta would be a bastion of progressive, let's find our way back towards the center ground politics. I never would have dreamed.
Right.
But, you know, with a progressive mayor in Calgary and also in Edmonton, and now you have a leader who wants to put the progressive back into conservative in Alberta. Mm-hmm. Again, we'll see how that plays out. If that finds some harmony in Alberta, I would suggest that maybe then it really starts to universally resonate into other pockets of Canada, don't you?
Quite possibly. And that's, again, maybe part of the lesson we're learning here with Tim Hudak.
Yeah.
Maybe he's too far right for this time.
It's Bill Hayes and Don Landry, and you're getting the gist of it.
First and foremost, let me say this. I much prefer Faith Hill's opening to a football night than Hank Williams Jr.'s opening to a football night.
I'll give you that.
I don't know.
I can give you several reasons.
All right. Hank Williams Jr. on a Fox television show.
Fox and Friends.
It's a morning show, which I've become familiar with only because I watch a lot of the Colbert Report and the Daily Show, and they mock them incessantly. But for very good reason, I do believe. So he's talking about politics. He's talking about Republicans versus Democrats and says, you know, a big mistake for Boehner was to go golfing with Barack Obama because it's like having Hitler and Netanyahu golf together. Well, Hank Williams Jr. putting the Yahoo in Netanyahu, don't you think? Nicely played. You don't ever bring up Hitler.
Never.
Don't bring him up for comparisons. Nothing good. Well, people will not accept it. They will accept it about as much as they will the N-word, which became
big in Rick Perry, for sure.
Rick Perry and his hunting camp.
I go so far as, by the way, I don't even go with Adolf.
Right.
Just, I'm going to throw that out there.
Yeah. Now, I don't know Hank Williams Jr. All I know is he was ready for some political football. And he stirred it up on that show.
Fumble!
It's a fumble of epic proportion. You just don't. So, you know,
he's an idiot.
He is. He must be if he brings up Hitler in a comparison. But I also think that maybe he just made a terrible, stupid choice when it comes to comparisons, but that the point he was making was if you asked him to clarify, if he could possibly clarify, maybe we should have him do it in song. Maybe that's easier for him, was that these two guys are poles apart and Boehner made a mistake by getting together and having a photo op with him and shouldn't try to get together. Runs desperately against what I believe in. We've talked about it.
Yep.
We've talked about it in this podcast.
Yep.
Conciliation. It's time for the politics of
Absolutely.
Conciliation. But so I think it would have been, you know, he just needed a better comparison. Like, that's like having a salmon and a grizzly bear, you know, golf together, which would have been more kind
I'd
of
like
country
the salmon.
Anyway, wouldn't it? That's like having a salmon and a grizzly bear golf together. You like the salmon. I like the
grizzly.
Yeah, I do.
Grizzly's
going to eat the salmon, has a better chance of gripping a golf club. Come on, Bill.
Well, no, but I think the salmon's just slippery enough that he might get some stuff by. That's all I'm saying.
I'm not so sure that Hank Williams Jr. was calling Barack Obama Hitler. But
no, but that's
but
how it
don't
looks.
Don't bring those two.
No,
you don't
not.
Bring the architect of the Holocaust together with a Jewish leader, or you don't bring those two solitudes together at all. You don't invoke Hitler. It's just you have to be in an idiotic moment to do that.
You know, here's something else idiotic. I'll throw this out there because it tells me, and perhaps you, just how stupid and off the rails the system has gotten in the United States. Hank Williams Jr. is saying he's thinking of running for Senate, for the U.S. Senate, from the state of Tennessee. Now, give that some thought. A moron like that.
So what he said will actually play to the base and get him elected.
Imagine him as a senator for the United States. I mean, that's where we are, ladies and gentlemen. Absolute stupidity. Well, Don, the NHL season is starting, and as always, that comes with great expectations. Things I know that will happen that will absolutely amaze me. A good example of just that occurred yesterday, when Brian Burke, the Toronto Maple Leafs general manager, sent a fourth-round pick to New Jersey for a guy named David Steckel.
Great deal.
Oh, yeah, the phone lines at sports radio stations went wild, most declaring what a steal this was for Berkey. Calm down, everyone. Please, calm down. Steckel is spelled, and this is for you, U-S-E-L-E-S-S.
Oh, my.
Well, seriously, come on. Right. He was traded for something about the same, a fourth-round pick. This deal was about as important as the one that brought Phil Housley to the Leafs years ago. Don't remember that one? Exactly.
This is The Gist of It.
Am I to understand that you don't think David Steckel is the linchpin piece, the catalyst, if it were, that will bring the Maple Leafs to promised land of playoff hockey? If not all the way to the chalice, Bill?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that
that's
David Steckel is not the answer everyone's been looking for.
What is your expectation of the Leafs? Let's discuss expectation for the Leafs. For this upcoming season. Do you want me to start off? Let me start up. But I said this last year too, and I feel like a dweeb saying it again, but I think there's a very good possibility that they can climb into the playoffs. It's going to be a very difficult thing for them to do, but I happen to believe that James Reimer is...
For real?
A for real goaltender.
That's the question.
Struggles in training camp, notwithstanding. I think he can be. Much has been made of their defense core, which is... fairly deep, if not spectacular in spots, it should be quite competent. Here's how they need to do it: winning games 2-1, 2-1, 2-1, 2-1, 2-1.
I don't see that happening a lot.
If they can do it,
yeah, okay.
If they can eke out those victories, then I think they can just squeak into the playoffs. There are a lot of really good teams in the Eastern Conference, and when you go through the teams that made the playoffs last year, you ask yourself, well, who's falling out? Who's not making it in? That seems to be the big question. But to focus just on the Maple Leafs, I think those are the strengths, obviously, between the pipes. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I think he can be that guy, play it tight, and win low-scoring games. If they get into a lot of games where it's pretty free and easy and loose, they're not. They're not going to win games.
No, running gun, they can't beat you.
3-2 or 4-3, they're not.
No. Well, the problem is one that they've had for quite some time, and it's a lack of talent among their forwards. Right. They didn't get a whole lot better. I mean, I'm not sold on Tim Connolly, and I'm certainly not sold on how long he's going to be able to play. If they get 70 games out of Tim Connolly, I will be stunned.
Yeah.
You know, but the problem with them is that the other guys, I mean, they have one NHL line, one line that you could say, you know what, you could put this line on any team in the NHL, even Vancouver or Boston, won Stanley Cups, and they would be one of the top two lines, and that's Grabowski, Kuhlman, and MacArthur. But past that, boy, there's nothing but question marks up front. And they haven't been able to address that. I'm sure they're aware of it.
Keenly. If Brian Burke was not aware of it, all he needs to do is flip on the television, the radio, or read
newspapers.
Everyone's
so obvious. The other thing, though, that's interesting to me is, and what you said, I think, is what most people are saying. There are teams that are stronger. There's some teams that, you know, maybe not be as strong as last year. And even with this Leafs team, you really don't know where they're going to be down the road. Firstly, I absolutely believe that this team will go through several changes over the course of this season. I don't think Brian Burke's the type of guy who will sit back and just allow this team to stay the way it is, especially if it performs as we expect it will. Secondly, you never know about injuries, and not just on this team, but around the league. If you look at a team like... well, let's say Montreal, for instance.
Right.
Their whole success is predicated on one guy, in my opinion, and that's Carey Price. Carey Price goes down for any length of time, they're in deep trouble. There are very few teams. I would count Washington, Boston, and probably Pittsburgh as the only three that are definite to make the playoffs. I like Philadelphia a lot, but they went through a pretty big pretty big change in their roster. They lost arguably their two best forwards.
Yeah.
And while they've replaced them with some pretty good guys and some people are expected to step up and take their place, it's going to take some time. I'm not sure that they're going to be as good as people are expecting. Mind you, they have a goalie now for the first time in a long time.
I mean, look, I think Tampa, good team.
Maybe.
The playoffs. Rangers, probably. The Rangers are one of a couple of teams that I can see quite possibly coming back to the Leafs. The Leafs have to leap forward, too.
Well, the Rangers are weak on defense.
Right, and they have a goaltender that they lean again.
Yeah.
You know, the goalie goes down, or even if he just gets exhausted, it's a bit of a problem for them. Montreal, again, for reasons you've discussed, I think that these are a couple of teams that the Leafs might be able to set their sights on. Tampa looks good to go to me. Buffalo, I think,
they're much
could
better.
Actually win the conference.
Yep.
You'd probably bet on Philadelphia right now, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
The Capitals, Pittsburgh, it's an odd duck, isn't it? Should be okay, but you know, and without Sidney and without Malkin, you know, they did get into the playoffs. I mean, for large periods of stretches.
Well, they have a couple of things going for them. They have, A, I like their goaltending. B, their defense is, while there's no one really spectacular, Chris Letang is pretty good. It's strong. Up the middle, even without Sidney Crosby, you got Malkin and Jordan Staal. And if Crosby comes back, you're better than anybody in the league.
Yeah.
So I like what I see out of them. Plus, I think their coaching is outstanding. I mean, the reason they did so well last year with all of those injuries was they had a guy who knew how to, you know, get them going. And I think that's a big part of it. Washington's the team to watch, I think. They now have a goalie. They also, I think, have shored up a little bit up front. And I think Ovechkin, although a lot of people were disappointed with the goals that he scored last year, he certainly didn't have a great season that way. I think his game got better. I think he's a better all-around player, and he's still dangerous every time he touches the puck.
I think Washington's a team that will largely look like it did last year, which is inconsistent. And I'm not so sure that they can get it done in the playoffs. Time will tell. But last year, recall, they had just a terrible, god-awful pre-Christmas swoon.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were able to get it together. But I think realistically, again, for the Maple Leafs, the goaltender better be the real deal.
I think he is.
They have to win tight defensive games consistently and constantly. And I think either the Rangers or Montreal got to come back to them a little bit for them to get into the playoffs. I think all of that can happen. And so, boom. Leafs make the playoffs this year.
That's just so sad. We talked about the Leafs, and I'm not expecting much.
I'm changing my prediction.
Oh, yeah. Oh, here we go. That didn't take long. So you're expecting them to make the playoffs. Good luck on that. No, that's good. It all could happen. I believe it's a quote.
Just keep saying it every year, and it'll come true at some point. I'll say
not necessarily. No. But Clark MacArthur is going to miss the first couple of games because of a head hit. And there have been, 16, I think, different suspensions in the preseason. It's been a very busy time for Brandon Shanahan, who is the new sheriff in town.
Too. He's got to get into game shape. That's
what
he's been doing.
It's sure enough. MacArthur, though, said something that I thought was pretty interesting, and I'd like your take on this, because what will happen here is that these guys will figure it out. Can't hit the head. And we know that's the case, and that's good. It is good for everybody. Sidney Crosby is a great example. The NHL missed him for half a season because of a head hit or two. The question is, according to MacArthur, this will take hitting out of the game.
No.
Do you believe that?
No, that's a ridiculous thing to say. It has to be coming from a guy who's just bitter because he got suspended and he spouted off a bit. It doesn't make much sense to me at all. They're not mutually inclusive, I guess is the phrase I'm looking for. Ban shots of the head and there's no hitting. We all like good, hard hits, and you can do it cleanly. And over the years, the definition of what is a good, clean, hard hit has changed. It hasn't taken hitting out of the game. And this is the same way.
Yeah, but his point is that because...
What, you won't want to take the chance?
No, I think...
It's not exactly like the Canadian Hockey Association's rule about even accidental hits to the head will could get you tossed out.
I understand that, but his point is that rather than take a chance on a hit that may go awry, guys aren't going to hit at all. No. And I'm not so sure that there's going to be some element of that. I think you'll see a lot less hitting.
No. You guys will always have opportunities to staple guys into the boards and do it cleanly. They're going to have opportunities to contact them in open ice. It doesn't have to be a wreck at a four-way stop for people to be interested in to applaud good body contact. Just finishing a check and rubbing a guy out has always been something that I've noticed and went, good play.
Absolutely, nice, absolutely. But in this environment...
A railway crossing accident for people to go, hey, there's a good hit.
This environment, I think these guys will stop doing it. Now,
what are we going to have, touch hockey out there?
His concern is.
But he's wrong. He's wrong. You can't possibly agree with that notion.
Oh, I do. Absolutely.
Saying if you drop the speed limit from 100 to 90, we're not going to have collisions.
No, that's not at all what it is. No, it's not. What you'll see happening here is a lot of guys will pull up rather than take a chance on a hit that they think might end up being a head hit.
No, that's not what pro hockey players do. That won't happen.
You know what? This whole thing is designed to get them to start thinking about it. That's what's going to happen. Because believe me, we're seeing a rush on these head hits now, and a lot of them, to me, were not deliberate. They ended up being head hits, but they weren't meant to be. Now there were a few that went way over the line.
Stop them, Bill. Do you want to go back to an accidental high stick is no penalty?
No.
Your responsibility for your stick hitting a guy in the head, even if it's completely accidental, and we see it all the time. Guys go to the penalty box because their stick accidentally hit somebody. Yeah, I mean, do you want to take that out too? Well, that was just an accident. Play on.
No. Here's the problem with it. I don't want to see this happen. I'm just saying this is what MacArthur said, and to some extent I believe him. Because I think what will happen is these guys will start thinking, look, is this hit worth 2 games?
No.
And it's not just the 2 games.
No time to think about that. When you're out there on the ice making your play, you just make your play. That's it. You got a chance.
Then what's the point of the suspensions? If they're not thinking about it, what's the point of the suspending these guys? You're not going to get the desired result.
Because you get a dangerous player off the ice for an extended period of time. Plays into another argument that I have. Suspensions aren't long enough. If you're a dangerous player, if you continually show that you're a dangerous player, then you should be off the ice for extensive periods of time. And at some point, out of the league completely if you show a propensity for being reckless. Are you listening to me, Matt Cook?
Here's the deal. You may be right. Hitting may never be out of the game. I sure hope so. I do not want to see hitting leave the game. It's much too much a part of it. But I also believe that while this is going on, until it's determined what the head hit does, how you do it, how it's going to be policed, these guys will make less hits. That's all. I'll put it that way.
I don't think less... Well, there may be fewer hits, but the quality will be higher, if you will. I mean, if a guy... Maybe I should think of it from this point of view. I mean, even if you're right, so what? So if we have fewer hits in hockey, is that going to make it...
I don't want it to be
the beautiful sport.
No, I don't want the ice capades. I don't want the ice capades.
No one is talking about turning into Battle of the Blades here. All right? If hockey outlawed all physical contact, you have a complaint. All the NHL has done here, all Brendan Shanahan is doing and saying to guys like Clark MacArthur is, don't do stupid stuff. You can still hit a guy solidly. And we see them all the time. We see good, clean, hard hits all the time. Do it that way. Don't do it the stupid way or you're going to sit on the bench for a while. Not even in the bench.
No.
You're going to be in civvies.
The thing is, these guys think about that not just as missing 2 games, it's missing a paycheck.
There's
a lot of money involved here.
Right. Well, again, what is the most important thing to you? Reckless hockey that's fun and sees a guy splayed out on the ice every once in a while, or the safety of some of the best athletes on the planet?
Listen, I'm all for it. I'm just saying that this is a byproduct we have to look for. This could end up being something that will take place because you wanted to take something else out of the game. That's all I'm saying. I think he has a point.
All right, well, fine. I mean, He doesn't. I mean, it's not even going to be noticeable how much fewer hits you see out in an NHL game because of this. It won't even be noticeable. You're going to see lots of heavy contact. You're just not going to see guys running guys into the boards from behind. You're not going to see guys take liberties with people coming through the center because their head is down. which, by the way, they should be able to do once in a while without the threat of somebody who's a coworker, albeit on the other team, trying to end their career on the center ice dot. That's all we're trying to get at here. That's what the NHL should have been doing years ago. It's what it needs to be doing right now and has to do in with even more frequency in the future.
Let me bring up one name. And this is a guy that's lionized. People look at him as an example of how the game should be played. Scott Stevens. And I would say to you, of most of the big hits I've seen Scott Stevens make, a lot of them were aimed at the head.
Fine. We don't need those. Are you saying what? Are you going
I'm
to
I'm saying
have
that that's part of the culture.
Is this going to be an NHL that is not as attractive to you because we remove the Scott Stevens hit?
I'm just saying.
Take it out.
That's one of the things. If people will look at that and go, I can't do that anymore.
Good. But yeah. Good.
So they won't do anything close to it.
So I won't hit at all.
They won't.
I won't hit at all. This is like you saying to me, Don, I don't want you to make jokes on this podcast anymore. Oh, then I just won't. I won't say anything at all. You know, because I might get into an area where I actually make a joke, Bill. There, that's a better comparison, isn't it?
that does make a little
say.
More sense. I
haven't heard one yet.
We'll revisit this.
It's Don Landry and Bill Hayes, and you're getting the gist of it.
Bill, let me ask you a question about modern technology, about one company in particular, all right, and that would be Apple. Is there business mission statement, is their business plan to make all of the people who make major purchases from them feel like idiots within a year because they don't have the newest one?
Oh, Don.
Do they want you to regret making the major purchase as quickly as possible?
Don, you clearly have not drunk the apple juice. It's clear.
I have in some...
Planned obsolescence. That's what it is. And you remember in the car business?
Sure.
It used to be, we'll build it for 3 years and then you have to have a new one. Well, they've realized that doesn't work.
Well, yeah, we got them to fix that. Good to see your 78 Ford Granada rusting out after a year and a half, right?
True, true.
It's a true story, Bill.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Hey, I had a Vega.
Standard shift.
It's not good.
So, I mean, we got that to change. I mean... I clearly believe that the guys at Apple and the ladies who, you know, who are the powers that be are disappointed right now. Because I think that their goal is probably to make you believe you have to have a new phone more often than you need a calendar. And from iPhone 4 to 4S, it was 15 months, Bill.
Yes.
Clearly, that's not good enough. They're sitting around going, what can we do to make sure people have to buy a phone before they got to buy a new calendar? People, come on, let's think. Let's get this done. This isn't... I mean,
you know what the sad thing is, though? People react that way.
Yes, they do.
Like, people, I gotta have the new one. Why? What more can you possibly need in a phone? My phone is very simple. It rings, I pick it up. Hello.
Brings me to that point. It's not really.
I'm an idiot?
No. I think you're right. I agree with you. My phone's fairly old, too, and I don't have a smartphone or, you know, that's what they call them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't have that. I just have a normal flip phone from Motorola. It's fairly new, about a year and a half ago. And a couple of months ago, maybe a month ago, somebody told me, geez, what kind of a relic is that? What are you watching, Knight Rider reruns all the time? And I'm like, the thing is like a year and a half old. It flips open and I answer calls. But people clearly think that, no, if you don't have the 4S, what, you know, you've only got the 4. It's like they're going to feel badly for you or something, you know. Oh, you've got the 4. I have the 4S, but yours is okay too. Yeah, yours is okay. Isn't it then not Apple's fault? It's our fault, generally speaking.
Clearly.
For going, I have to have the one that's a little faster, has a better camera in it, has the wireless capability. Yours works great. You can keep it for a few years, and you don't have to worry about, never mind 4S, 4T, 4U, 5A. They'll all be out, and your phone's still going to work fine. Don't worry about it.
Theoretically.
Don't line up for everything that Steve Jobs and now his predecessor, or not his predecessor, his successor comes up. You don't have to line up for 48 hours to get every little thing that Apple gives you.
Right? But they've trained us that we do. That's the key.
Well, and that is the business plan.
Thank you. John, I'm going to throw you something here, and I know you haven't had a chance to really think about this.
I'm looking fastball here.
It'll be at the top. Whatever comes off the top of your head.
I'm going to tee off on you.
Thanksgiving's coming up. What are you thankful for?
Ooh, what am I thankful for? I'm thankful for my lovely wife, Anne. I'm thankful for, my family. I'm thankful for my mom, Irene. I'm thankful for good friends like you. I'm thankful for what I believe to be decent health. Some of these are
they're pretty good.
You should
exactly
be thankful
right.
for health. I'm
mm-hmm.
I'm thankful that the Argos aren't 2-11
yet.
No, but they can't be now. They can be 3-11. What else am I thankful for? Just off the top of my head, those are things. And I'm thankful that milk chocolate exists. You want me? How much of a list do you want? Well, aren't you? Wait a second. Folks. He's rolling his eyes. Are you not?
Well, milk chocolate
came
right out of left field. What's that?
Well, you said whatever comes to mind.
Okay.
These are the things.
All right.
So, but are you not thankful milk chocolate exists? Of course you are. Don't roll your eyes at that.
All right. Okay. I apologize for that.
All right. What about
I'm
you?
Thankful I can apologize, actually. All
right. You?
Well, I'm thankful for the same things you.
My
lovely wife and my loving family and my health, my friends, including yourself and everybody else thankfully answer to that. Well, maybe not thankfully, truthfully answer to that. I think that I'm thankful that I live in this country because I truly do believe this is the greatest country in the world. And I think one of the reasons for it is we have our freedoms, but we also have, in my view, a fair amount of respect for everybody's else's rights to their freedoms. And maybe that's something that's lacking in other places. I'm grateful that I have the opportunity to travel as much as I do. I wish sometimes I didn't quite have as much time, but but that's neither here nor there.
I'm thankful for leisure time. Sometimes.
But there's an awful lot to be thankful for. And I bring it up, and the reason I do is too many times we don't think of the things that are good in our lives. We think of the things that are bad in our lives. I know that's a cliche as well, but sometimes that's what we need to do.
I think that there's a taking of stock that can and needs to be done more thoughtfully on a daily basis to just for your own personal health, I think. It's helpful. It can be very stressful. Life for many, many different reasons, but when you boil it right down to the way things are going in the rest of the world, it's pretty good here. And do you really, really want to waste time and energy on being stressed about whether the front of your driveway will be clear of snow taken away by the city, or you have to do it by yourself?
No, I don't.
Or if there is a snowstorm, if your street hasn't been cleared by 6 o'clock that night, you can get all very stressed about these things. And I'm not trying to be preachy. I'm just saying if you're thoughtful about these things and your station in life and what you do have, and you know when your digital cable goes out, sure, you pound the table and you curse and you wanted to watch Monday Night Football and that kind of thing. But if that's the thing that really bothered you that day, if that was the hardship,
you had a good day.
Pretty good life.
Yeah.
And things are generally pretty good. I think we can remember that more thoughtfully, more regularly. It will make us a better city, province, nation, and individually, I think it helps one's health.
Incredibly, and I do mean incredibly, it's that time again. Time to say goodbye for another week. Don and I wish you a very happy Thanksgiving, be it with your family or on your own. We thank you for listening and invite you to share any feedback at donlandry.com. May your gravy hit the plate, your pumpkin pie hit the spot, and your guests hit the road sooner rather than later. For Don Landry, I'm Bill Hayes. That's The Gist of It.
The Gist of It is available every Wednesday afternoon through iTunes or at donlandry.com.